Good evening and welcome to Nathan Africam. We are coming to you from the English service of the Voice of America on Saturday, November 12th. Thanks for joining us. I'm Douglas Impuga in Washington. Heavy fighting reported between DRC forces and M23 rebels in Rugari, a town about 30 kilometers north of Goma, the capital of North Kivu province.
The National Army opened two front lines against M23 rebels in the north and the south of territory they control.
The World Food Program says it has run out of cash and will have to suspend life-saving food aid to 1 million people in Mozambique's Cabo Delgado province if it does not receive urgently needed funding by February.
We've been delivering half rations since April 2022 because of limited funding and increased needs.
And UN experts say the Somali Islamist militant group Al-Shabaab has widened its revenue stream beyond its traditional activities. Those and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Heavy fighting between DRC forces and M23 rebels in Rugari, a town about 30 kilometers north of Goma, the capital of North Kivu province. On Friday, the high voltage line linking Goma to the Matebe hydroelectric plant was hit by the fighting, disrupting electricity supply in the town of more than 1 million people. The fighting comes 3 days after two Congolese army fighter jets and two helicopter gunships struck rebel positions. For more on the situation in eastern DRC, I reached reporter Jafar Alkatanti in Goma for the latest on the fighting.
On Friday, the National Army opened two front lines against M23 rebels in the north and the south of territory they control. This is after the 3 days of bombing their position and their warehouse of munitions by the jet fighters. So on ground today, the FRDC attacked the bridge of Mabenga and the villages of Kaunga and Rugari. According to the spokesperson of FRDC, they succeeded to recover some villages in the north.
It appears the bombing, the fighter jets and the helicopter gunships that bombed rebel positions didn't stop the M23 from advancing?
Yes. You know, rebels doesn't have many long-target weapons, so they can't respond on the airplane attacks. So when jets bombing, that stopped their progress, and then the FRDC ground troops attacked also. But unfortunately, this bombing has destroyed the hydro farm of Matebe, which is the one produce electricity for the city of Goma. Like at least 60% of Goma is in the dark now because of that problem.
So what's the situation of the people who are in the area where the fighting is taking place?
People are more afraid because when M23 controlled the city of Kiwanja, which is very close to the bridge of Mabenga and the village of Kaunga, they forced people to stay in the village. So many people didn't flee. All who was there when M23 controlled the city was forced to stay so that they are seeing and hearing everything going on in that region for now, and they are terrorists.
M23 claims to have knocked out several DRC military tanks. What have we heard about that?
M23 did a statement on Friday, and they posted it on their Twitter account that they succeeded to explode two tanks of FRDC, but the FRDC didn't confirm this information, and they shared some photos on social media of two tanks on fire. So we don't know if it's true or not, but one thing we know, fighting very hard from this morning to this time, they're still fighting. One more thing is that the Congolese government decided to do not let journalists to approach the operating zone for many reasons. First, it's because of fake news, because some citizens who are not even journalists but working for M23 are going to the front line, filming soldiers, and then they do bad comments. And one more thing is to control media, to control information. So they want to be the only one source of information, and they don't need media go to the front line area. And also the situation of IDP in Goma. We are talking now about 200,000 families and a lot of people without any assistance. Some local organizations are doing their best, but it's still not enough because people need food, medicines, and many things.
That was reporter Jafar Alkatante in Goma. Thanks, Jafar. The World Food Programme warns it has run out of cash and will have to suspend life-saving food aid to 1 million people in Mozambique's Cabo Delgado province if it does not receive urgently needed funding by February. For VOA, Lisa Schrein reports from Geneva.
The UN Food Agency says aid will be cut off in February if $51 million is not urgently received. February is the peak of the lean season in Mozambique, when food stocks are at their lowest. The month is also during the country's cyclone season, a period of great vulnerability. WFP Country Director and Representative in Mozambique, Antonella D'April, says without humanitarian assistance, 1 million desperate, uprooted people will be on the verge of hunger. She says this worrisome funding situation is not new. It has been going on for some time.
We've been delivering half rations since April 2022. Because of limited funding and increased needs. So this means that these affected families by the conflict received or have been receiving less than 40% of their minimum caloric needs.
Around 4,000 people in Cabo Delgado have been killed and more than 1 million forced to flee their homes during 5 years of fighting between insurgents and Mozambique's army. The government's fight against the Islamist rebels is backed by troops from Rwanda and the regional bloc SADC, which is the Southern African Development Community. UN officials say violence has intensified in recent months with unprecedented attacks in districts close to the provincial capital, Pemba, and is spreading to neighboring provinces. Speaking from the Mozambican capital, Maputo, D'April says these attacks have been pushing more people to flee their villages, leaving everything behind. She describes their condition as dire.
That these people are displaced and traumatized multiple times. 50% of the people displaced are children. So, of course, if the food insecurity gets worsened, the first ones to suffer are children and women.
D'April says WFP needs the international community to step in now to avert hunger in the short term. She adds money also is needed to address the root causes of chronic food insecurity in Mozambique so people can become self-sufficient. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
We'll be right back.
The UN's Under Secretary General for Peace Operations, Jean-Pierre Lacroze, during a visit to South Sudan, has called for greater efforts to stabilize the country. South Sudan is struggling with ethnic conflict and a faltering peace process amid growing needs for humanitarian aid. Sheila Pony reports from Juba, South Sudan.
During his official visit to South Sudan, Jean-Pierre Lacroix visited the town of Bor in Jonglei State, where communities have been gravely impacted by cattle raids, flooding, and a lack of basic resources. Lacroix, the chief of UN peacekeepers, met with UN personnel, humanitarian partners, and the donor community, and said he hopes to encourage more progress in South Sudan's ongoing peace process.
Many urgent humanitarian crises and the resources, both the political resources but also the financial resources that are available to cope with this crisis are by definition limited. And therefore, our advocacy will be strong. And we do recognize as well that there is an expectation from the international community to supporting South Sudan. There has to be the sense that there is a way forward. The ultimate solution is political. We have recognized a number of positive steps in the implementation of the revitalized peace agreement, but we do also acknowledge that more needs to be done.
Climate shocks have made South Sudan's dire humanitarian situation worse as the country deals with some of the worst flooding in nearly a century. At the same time, intercommunal violence continues to create emergencies where the United Nations mission in South Sudan, UNMISS, attempts to protect civilians. According to Lacroix, his trip allowed him to see firsthand the negative impact of climate change on peace efforts. Farmers and cattlemen compete for space as drought and flooding change migration paths, fueling conflict. Lacroix acknowledged that South Sudan has suffered greatly as a result of climate change and said more technical assistance and funding are required to assist the country in coping with the climatic shocks. Lacroix's aide, Earl Courtney Rattray, who came with the UN peacekeeping chief to Jonglei, described hearing complaints from the people about lack of food, inadequate shelter, and a shortage of vital medical items. Rattray stated that there's an urgent need to find ways to lay the groundwork for South Sudan's growth and stability.
Stability has to come with a sense of participation by all stakeholders in the outcome of the political process. That is something that has to be one of the foundation pillars of building democratic institutions and having an electoral process that people believe in so that it has the legitimacy that it needs.
Martin Elia Lomero, South Sudan's Minister of Cabinet Affairs, said there's been progress towards improving people's lives, but quickly added that the government's top priority is to keep the peace.
Our focus is to maintain this peace that we have, ensure that we are careful about how we handle it, that we focus on taking the country towards elections, and that means we have to work to provide secure environment in terms of the security of the geopolitical territory of South Sudan, providing security to our citizens, the police, taking care of the security of the country.
South Sudan is still recovering from 5.5 years of civil war, which displaced several million people. And implementation of the peace deal has been slow, raising concerns of new fighting and further instability. Lacroix emphasized the importance of recovery and resilience and expressed hope that with continued international support, the children of South Sudan can look forward to brighter, more prosperous lives. For Sheila Pawnee in Juba, South Sudan, this is Anita Powell, VOA News.
Experts say the Somali Islamic militant group Al-Shabaab has widened its revenue stream beyond its traditional activities like charging tolls at checkpoints to illegally taxing properties and construction. In a new report, UN experts say the terrorist group is seeking more funds to pay about $1 million per month in salaries to its fighters. The report says despite Somalia's crackdown on Al-Shabaab, the militants are also able to move funds through local and Islamic banks. Ahmed Mohamed reports from the Somali capital, Mogadishu.
A Somali woman who declined to be named for security reasons tell his viewer that Al-Shabaab militants demanded she pay $425 this year in so-called taxes for a house she bought almost 3 years ago in Mogadishu. She says a man called her on the phone and summoned her to an Al-Shabaab court outside El Shabia in Lower Shabelle region. She says after traveling there, she met a crowd of people from Mogadishu who were also summoned by the court. She says nobody dares to defy the group's orders because people get killed. A UN report made public this month says the Islamist militants, in an effort to increase revenue, are now charging illegal taxes on property and construction. The UN expert's report says Al-Shabaab in May issued a notice to households of annual charges between $100 and $300 for iron sheet, stone and multi-story houses. The report says the group also extorts owners of buildings and homes being constructed around Mogadishu at about 25% of the value of the development. VOA spoke to four Mogadishu residents who paid Al-Shabaab the illegal property taxes between May and July this year, including one who paid an additional $125 fine because of delayed payment. None of them would give their names out of fear of payback from the militants. Abdisalam Gulet is a former Somali deputy intelligence chief and co-founder of Mogadishu-based security firm Eagle Range Services. He says cutting off Al-Shabaab's funding is key winning the war against the militants. He says there's no doubt that the group gets tax from the capital and the port. Gulet says the government should come up with plans to deal with these issues. People do not pay money to Al-Shabaab because they love it, he says. They pay due to fear. Gulet says the government needs the confidence of the Somali people, because people know where Al-Shabaab gets its income and the companies that are supporting the group. Somalia's government has warned against paying illegal taxes and fees to Al-Shabaab, but Somalis say authorities cannot guarantee their security if they do not pay. Gulet says Al-Shabaab has embedded itself within the business sector, making it difficult to isolate it from other traders. Gulet says Al-Shabaab is committed to living in the community, so it is difficult for the government to block Al-Shabaab's financial streams. He says even traders may not know that they trade with Al-Shabaab, while others know it. Despite the government efforts to cut off Al-Shabaab financing, the UN report says the militant can freely move funds through commercial and Islamic banks and payment firms. The report says the Islamist group moves money in amount slightly less than $10,000 to avoid being flagged by anti-money laundering and terror financing monitors. The Somali government this week announced it had closed several accounts thought to be operated by Al-Shabaab. Somalia's Deputy Information Minister Abdirahman Al-Adala spoke Monday at press conference. He says they have received more than 10,000 messages from Somalis sharing bank accounts that the Khawarij were using to get money. Al-Adala says they directed the banks and remittance firms to block the funded accounts. Abdullahi Godah Barre is Somalia's former Minister for Planning and International Cooperation. He told VOA the move to shut bank accounts affiliated with Al-Shabaab was a step in the right direction.
The employees of the banks must be held accountable, and also those who are proxy, who their names are used to open accounts, should be prosecuted and face justice. That should be the next step, in my opinion. But overall, the government's direction is right, and I think that's a very important step that they did, but I don't think it's enough to achieve significant tangible results.
Barre says Somalia should also invest more to build the capacity of its investigating agencies to better track the flow of money to the terrorist group. Ahmed Mohamed for VOA News, Mogadishu, Somalia.
Human Rights Watch says the closure of camps for people displaced by Islamist militants in Nigeria's Borno State a year ago has pushed more than 200,000 people into extreme poverty. In a recent report, the rights group says Nigerian authorities have failed to provide those removed from the camps with adequate alternatives. Timothy Abiezu reports from Abuja, Nigeria.
The 59-page report by Human Rights Watch was released more than 1 year after Borno State authorities began shutting down IDP camps in the capital, Maiduguri. The rights group said lack of essential support by humanitarian aid organizations since then has pushed over 200,000 IDPs into deeper suffering and destitution. It said authorities did not provide those removed from camps with adequate support for food, shelter, and security. Aniete Ewang is the author of the Human Rights Watch report. She says authorities did not get the opinions of the IDPs before closing the camps.
This plan to shut down these camps is premature because the authorities cannot ensure that people who are moving out of these camps can continue to sustain themselves. In many of the places they're encouraging people to return to, there's not enough infrastructure to support the large influx of people coming in.
The report said more than 140,000 IDPs were compelled to evacuate 8 camps in Maiduguri between May 2021 and August of this year. It said 2 other camps housing a total of nearly 74,000 people are expected to close by the end of 2022. Borno State authorities said the decision was made to resettle IDPs back to their ancestral homes, reduce reliance on aid, and foster the redevelopment plan of the conflict-stricken state. Baba Ali Mustafa is the immediate past welfare coordinator of the Borno State Ministry of Women Affairs. He defends the decision to close the camps and says authorities have been making efforts to help the IDPs resettle.
The state government did it with the intention to build their resilience. That doesn't mean they were left stranded. Monthly, the state government moved to distribute them food items. Some of them, they were even given a starter pack to start business. It's a gradual process.
But Ewang questions whether Nigerian authorities made the right decision.
When you cut off people from their source, which is significantly humanitarian aid, on the premise that you want to wean them off of food to develop, and you're not putting in place any sort of alternatives, are you really pursuing a development objective? We're not seeing people benefit. We're rather seeing people suffer, and that is really concerning for us.
Millions of people in northeast Nigeria have been displaced from their homes since the Boko Haram insurgency began in 2009. Borno, Adamawa, and Yobe states are the most impacted states, with more than 1.8 million displaced in Borno State alone. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
It is the biggest sports event of the year, the 2022 World Cup in Qatar. Join VOA to celebrate Africa's king sport. In-depth coverage, breakout stars, Cinderella teams, coaches, players, and let's not forget the fans from the four corners of the continent and from the city of Doha. Don't miss the fun with Team VOA Africa. Let's experience the magic of football together.
Ghana's national men's football team, nicknamed the Black Stars, will be making its fourth World Cup appearance in Qatar. Ghana is in Group H, along with Portugal, Uruguay, and South Korea. Sunny Young spoke with VOA colleague Mokbil Yaboro about Ghana's top players, the team's head coach, Otto Addo, and its history at past World Cups.
Sporty World Cup greetings, Mokbil.
Sporty World Cup greetings to you too, Sunny.
Mokbil, the Black Stars of Ghana will be making their fourth World Cup appearance in Qatar. They're in Group H, along with Portugal, Uruguay, and South Korea. Who are the players to watch for the Black Stars?
Sonny, this is a tough group that Ghana finds themselves in. Portugal, the clear favorite of the group, and then it's anyone's game after that, as they say. As for the players to watch, I'd have to start off with Daniel Amarte, the center back that plays for Leicester City. With his experience playing at a high level both for his club and his national side, I'd also have to add the captain of the Black Stars, Andrew Ayew. Even though he's 32 years old, he has the veteran leadership that this team will need to make it happen. After having played in both France and England for elite teams, he is now with the Qatari side Al Sadd. Hopefully playing in Qatar gives his team the calm that they need in this group. Lastly, I'll have to say Abdul Fatou Ishahaku, the 18-year-old attacking midfielder, and he's already played for the Ghanaian national side and is playing for the Portuguese giants Sporting CP. For him to be playing at this level at this age means he will be a problem for years to come.
Mukbil, Ghana's head coach, Otto Addo, played for the Black Stars at the 2006 World Cup in Germany. How can such World Cup playing experience help in his coaching role?
Sonny, similarly to Aliyu Cisse, Otto Addo is going to be coaching from a place of experience. When you're able to get your players to buy into your strategy and they know what you've been able to accomplish in your career, it is very helpful. Also, here's another African coach coaching a team that he's played for in the past, and his past experience may make him relatable to the younger and less experienced players.
The Black Stars might be my sentimental favorite when it comes to Africa's five World Cup-bound teams. My very first trip to Africa was in 2001 when I traveled to Ghana. And Mukbil, I also have fond memories of doing World Cup Q&As with the voice of America's late, great, gallant Ghanaian, King Richard Coty. King Richard loved the Black Stars, Mukbil. But sentiment aside, Mukbil, this looks like a very tough group for Ghana. The Black Stars kick off their World Cup campaign on November 24th against Cristiano Ronaldo in Portugal. How do you see that match, Mukbil?
Sonny, I'm not going to sugarcoat it for the Black Stars, but they have a very, very tall task in that match against Portugal. Also, Cristiano Ronaldo is at the tail end of his career and has had his own issues with his club, Manchester United, where the world fell in love with his playing style for years. If the Black Stars can keep the likes of Ronaldo from playing his style of finesse football and get physical, they'll stand their best chance in that game. Honestly, a win against the Portuguese side would be unreal. But even a draw in that group stage would do wonders for the Black Stars.
Mukbil, Ghana will wrap up World Cup group play against Uruguay on December 2nd. The Black Stars, of course, lost in controversial fashion to Uruguay in the World Cup quarterfinals in South Africa in 2010. Is revenge a factor, Mukbil? Or is that loss so long ago, it simply doesn't matter much now to this current batch of Black Stars?
Sonny, that match was 12 years ago and the team is almost completely different, but I feel like that game shocked all of Africa and not just Ghana. To say that there won't be any feeling of revenge would be an understatement. And Luis Suarez is going to be on that squad playing against Ghana, so it will be a factor, I believe. Also, any reason you can have to want to go into a game extra hard for a specific match, you'll use anything to get out of those group stage matches.
Mukbil, in late September, in a friendly World Cup warm-up match, Ghana defeated Nicaragua 1-0 on a goal by 18-year-old Abdul Fatou Ishahaku, another young Black Stars player, 22-year-old Mohamed Kudus, has been earning kudos playing for Ajax in Europe. Mukbil, do you see these young Black Stars shining brightly in Qatar?
Sonny, it is funny you mentioned these bright young stars. I had previously mentioned Abdul Fatou Ishahaku in the key players to watch. And if I could have added just one more player, it would have been Mohamed Kudus. These young stars play with so much heart and conviction and aren't scared of the big moment. Be prepared for them to look great, and I really think they will shock us in these group stages. That's all from me. Back to you, Sonny.
Thanks, Mukbil. That's my VOA colleague, Mukbil Yabaro, speaking with us here in Washington.
Sonny and Mukbil will be doing a weekly podcast on the World Cup action.
Hey, football fans, FIFA's World Cup 2022 kicks off in Qatar in just a few days. Join Sonny Young and myself, Mukbil Yabaro, every weekend on Nightline Africa when we bring you On Goal with Sonny and Mukbil. We will bring you everything World Cup related. Tune in starting next Saturday at 16:05 UTC and 18:05 UTC.
You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of the Voice of America. I'm your host, Douglas Impoga in Washington. And coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday Music Spot from our collection of music from across the continent.
For your love,
baby, I
follow for your love.
Color, color,
I demand Yeah. Vladimir Shakir.
I'm a logo, but it's so cool. But you should do that, Tanyoko. And well, Nibel, Nimoko, Moiko, Aqualo, Vimbeko. Say, we don't like designer. I be no like to that part. If you like that, Gaga, you got to shop at it.
Here we go.
Palazzo, Kiki, Goya, for the easy. No sleeping, no one, no turning. About 18, Yang, Yang, Yang. My chill, Shamo, Yang. But you never thought of Dari. Ever be shabby.
I'm not
make a ginger gimme key, kokoro. My coach, I beat your love. Anywhere I go, I come up with my bum, love. So they do like ball.
If you want make a ginger gimme key, kokoro. My coach, I beat your love. Come make a show you my banana. No, they do like ball.
Make a love, make a rub, make a touch of bunny. Make a rubber bunny. Till I go lotion, I'm a rubber bunny. Like fine wine, say you sweet when you whine. Me, I know if you leave when you whine. As long as we go day, I'm on amigo pay. Yeah, we go day nice. If we enter the place, I go day nice. I go fiki, I go rewind. Say now me go be the DJ, I'm on feel nice. So, say my party know they stop to the daylight. Before you run, go the shot, you make you think twice. If not smoke, you want smoke, say we day tight. I'm on my love, go, say we live nice. Yeah.
If you want make a ginger, give me key, kokoro. My coach, I beat your love. Anywhere I go, I come up with my bum, my love. So they do like ball.
If you want make a ginger, give me key, kokoro. My bad, I beat your love. Come make a show you my banana. No, they do like ball. Oh, yeah. I been making money, living reckless. I let me in my damn. If them dry, oh, if them dry, dog, then go sun. They go down. We go day nice. If we enter the place, I go day nice. I go fiki, I go rewind. Say now me go be the DJ, I'm on feel nice. So, say my party know they stop to the daylight. Before you run, go the shot, you make you think twice. If not smoke, you want smoke, say we day tight. I'm on my love, go, say we live nice. Yeah.
If you want make a ginger, give me key, kokoro.
That was music from the continent, and we hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline Africa team, we say thank you for joining us tonight. For more African news and features, visit our website at voafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. I'm your host, Douglas Impoga, in Washington, wishing you a very good evening.